Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear is a free preview of a podcast on our $5 exclusive episodes tier at patreon.com/retronauts. And if you want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up at the $5 exclusive episodes tier. Once you do that, you'll get access to all of our previous exclusive episodes and our future ones as well, as long as you remain a patron, and our exclusive episodes will launch every other Friday. Again, that is the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts, and I'll let you get to this free preview of one of our exclusive episodes. In 92, it felt like American Technos was making a concerted effort to unify the Cuneo brand for America under the title Crash and the Boys. So they had released Crash and the Boys Street Challenge, one of the Cuneo games, and they were getting ready to release another one, presumably by like 93, maybe late 92. But at that point, it was kind of too late to, you know, hang your hopes on the NES. And I think the issue for the Cuneo series was it really just started too late on the Famicom in Japan to have a legacy over here.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think it's weird because like some companies pushed on through on the NES to the end, like Taito and stuff. But Technos just didn't have the resources available to really sort of re-push Kunio-kun as these Crash and the Boys games.
Yeah, maybe if it happened a few years earlier, they could have had some a little more buy-in on the NES in America. But, it feels like so many of these are 92 or later, and that just, it feels way too late for NES games, at least when I was playing them. Generation changes have been known to kill so many developers, but in this case, it feels like the 16-bit generation is what did them in. A lot of their games from this era aren't very good. Super Double Dragon was super compromised. It's kind of unfinished. There's been interviews that have come out about just the complications of making that game, all the content that was cut and the cutscenes that were cut. And there is a Polygon interview that I mentioned before, and Kishimoto said, the company they were too devoted to making Kunio-kun games. They were also investing in, racing teams and real estate. And there's another article that Kurt linked me to that was Kishimoto talking in a Japanese interview about things. And my wife, Nina Matsumoto, was reading some of it, and she was telling me he also mentions trips to Hawaii. So it feels like the company, they might have been making really good games, but they were not very good at managing their money. And it felt like, for Kishimoto, not enough money was going into game development. More money was going into investments and vacations and things like that.
Yeah, that's crazy. And you see that a lot, I think, with a lot of the Japanese companies, the game companies that we know so well, is that there was a lot of crazy investments and like reaching into markets that they probably shouldn't have been, just chasing trends and stuff. And so I guess Technos definitely could not break in the way they wanted to.
The real estate thing was really, really big for a while. I know for whatever reason, a lot of people suddenly decided like we need to invest in real estate. And then, this was happening in the late 80s, early 90s. And then the economic bubble over there burst and all of those properties suddenly went underwater. And you have a lot of companies, I think, that kind of just dissolved because they got into financial trouble. And I don't know for certain, but I feel like when people got into trouble financially with these real estate investments, the trouble had to do with organized crime and, like having taken out loans and things like that, or owing debts to maybe some people they didn't want to have to owe debts to. And so they kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. That's, just some assumptions that I've sort of stitched together based on things that I've read, conversations I've had, some retrospectives and some research that has been done that just suggests that, this was a trap that a lot of people fell into in that very kind of late 80s period, where it just seemed like the Japanese economy would keep growing and improving forever. And they were like, well, we should, get into these investments. And it wasn't a Ponzi scheme, but it had the same effect where, as soon as the bubble collapsed, those investments were Just dead weight and a massive debt for everyone.
It does seem incredibly tragic on a cosmic level that the developer that kind of invented the fighting game and the brawler was just out of business by 96. That seems like they really had to have problems with money, because if you think about those Double Dragon games, even though they weren't making all the ports, I think each one of those games had between 8 to 12 ports. They had to be just cashing checks every day based on the royalties from those, or at least just selling the rights initially.
Yeah, you would hope, at least. I mean, hopefully some of the money actually did funnel back to them. But yeah, it's great. I mean, the bubble just did in a whole lot of different companies in the game industry, and it's really just crazy.
And I think the mid-90s were really the darkest period after the crash. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, because the bubble burst around 91 or 92, I believe. And so it was just a bunch of knock-on effects after that is what did it in. And then, you know, things like the 32-bit transition, people having to make 3D games a lot to, you know, gain appeal in the market. Just a whole bunch of different factors led to a whole bunch of different companies just completely going under.